When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, welcome to the Men's Journal Everyday Warrior podcast. We have one of your hosts for the Friday live sessions, which I know we've been delinquent on because we've been restructuring, but we're going to kick him off. We're going to kick him off hardcore. We've got some good changes coming. Of course, John Wellborn,
thank you.
Best known for 10 years in the NFL, and then stood up CrossFit football, yep. Which you got to give us the details behind
yeah.
this.
All right, yeah, well, it sounds weird. So I played my 10th year for the New England Patriots. I got hurt. And came home, had knee surgery, figured I'd get, you know, scoped, cleaned up, whatever was wrong, and then I'd be, you know, right back out there and go out and play my 10th year. All of a sudden, my injury, for some reason, and what was wild was a couple years before, I had a knee scope on a Monday and played on a Sunday. Now, all of a sudden, I go in for my knee scope, and I think the doctor was much too aggressive on what he did. He tried to grind a bunch of bone and just do too much, and I had a ton of swelling, and I couldn't get, like, function back in my knee. So I'm, like, sitting on the couch. It's cold out. I'm living in Orange County, Newport Beach at the time, and my knee was on this, like, CPM.
Yeah.
And that owned a little fitness company at the time named Greg Glassman called me and asked me if I would come and work with them and help them develop their technology on how to train athletes.
He called you. So Greg Glassman is the founder of CrossFit. Yeah. How did he know to call you? Because had you already been creating a reputation within?
Yeah. So that year before, I had been training up at Athletes Performance. I lived in Newport Beach, and that's in Carson, up at the Home Depot Center. I think it's StubHub. I don't know what it's become now. But I used to drive up every day, and anybody that's ever done the drive on the 405 from Orange County up to Carson knows a terrible drive. It could be 35 minutes or 3 hours. So I got to the point where I was a little burned out on the drive. So I'd go up there a few days a week. And then there was a gym that had bumper plates where I'd go limp and lift. That was about 45 minutes south of me. So I just kind of got burned out on looking for places to go and train. So I Googled Olympic lifting, and a little CrossFit gym popped up the road that was like two blocks. So I went in there, talked to the owner, and started training there. He reached out and talked to the CrossFit people and was like, hey, this pro football player is coming and training. And they showed me some of the CrossFit stuff. And about that time, I thought, I'll leave my reservations about CrossFit alone. He said, hey, if you really want to know more about it, you should go and do one of their seminars. So I went up to Santa Cruz, and this is actually where I met Dave Castro and Nicole Carroll and Tosh and everybody. So I went up and did a CrossFit level one, having never done it. You know, so I show up in jeans and basketball shoes, like, not expecting like to work out. And they're like, all of a sudden you're working out and people are like stripping down. I'm like, we're working out. I didn't know we were going to work out. I'd never done CrossFit. So fast forward, I start training at this CrossFit gym. The owner ends up, you know, talking to CrossFit HQ. They reached out to me and said, hey, would you do this documentary called Every Second Counts about for the CrossFit Games? So I didn't know what the CrossFit Games was. And I said, no, I'm getting ready to go to training camp. So I still hadn't been signed by a team at that point. And they kind of asked me again, and I was like, what is this thing? Like, oh, it's a bunch of workouts up in Aromas. We're going to work out for a couple days and have some fun. And I was like, yeah, fuck it. Let's go win this thing. So I showed up to do the CrossFit Games, and they filmed a documentary. It's on Netflix called Every Second Counts. And I was 312 pounds, getting ready to go play for, you know, back to play in the NFL, competed for a few days in Aromas and did all the CrossFit stuff and absolutely just got hammered. I think there were 200 people, and I think I finished in, like, maybe the 70s.
Yeah, that'd be your size alone.
Yeah, well, dude, I was doing burpees against 135-pound men. So, I mean, obviously, there was nothing heavy. They had told me there was going to be at least a 315-pound deadlift. At the last minute, they turned it to 275, because Chris Spieler was, like, who's, like, 135 pounds. It was already double body weight, and they felt 315 was too much. So I do that, and then a few days later, I got a call from Baltimore Ravens. I went out there and tried out for them. They offered me a contract. I didn't like the numbers, so I came home. Patriots called, and I went out there and went, you know, all through preseason, and I ended up dinging up my knee at the last preseason game and came home, had surgery. And as I was kind of just doing the rehab, teams were calling, and I kept telling them, I'm like, you know, I'm not ready. Maybe in, like, you know, week 3, week 4, I'll be better. And Greg hit me up and said, hey, would you come and work with us and help us develop our tech on how to train athletes? So I got in the car, drove out to Arizona, talked to he and his wife, kind of like we sat around, kind of like pitched what this looked like. And they were like, you know, we should call it CrossFit Football. And I was like, wow, it's a terrible name. Like, we're not going to be teaching tackling or any of the other stuff. And like, I'm not teaching football. And they're like, no, people will get it because you played football. And I'm like, it's still a terrible name. But it's what they wanted to do. So I drove home. 30 days later, they said, hey, do you think, when do you think you'd be able to put up a website and launch and have programming and everything? And I was like, well, what's an acceptable amount of time? And they were like, as soon as ASAP, I said, give me 30 days. So I went home, called a guy that I knew that designed websites and said, hey, I needed a website. I called my buddy Rick from Starling Gear and asked, hey, I need a logo. He sent me a logo. So I sent it to him. They put a website together, and then I went and developed programming. The problem was is I didn't know shit about strength conditioning in terms of like methodology or physiology. I just knew from what I had done to play as
how to execute what your trainers had given you in the past.
Yeah, because I'm real good. Like, just tell me what to do and I'll do it. And, you know, at certain points I would always ask coaches like, hey, why are we doing this? Like, how does hypertrophy work in this? And I knew enough physiology because I trained with bodybuilders and I trained and did all this, you know, training. I knew that, you know, train fast, be fast. I had spoken to Louis Simmons. I'd done the West Side stuff. I knew about compensatory acceleration. I mean, there were a lot of things in my training. I just never sat down and like looked at the physiology. So I started putting the program together. My wife, or actually my girlfriend at the time, who's my wife now, we went on vacation. And for like 5 days, I think we went to Mexico and I brought all these books. And I just sat on the beach, like drinking a pina colada and read like Super Training and Science and Practice, Zaskowski Science and Practice. All of these like training manuals, and sat down and I was like, okay, who am I? What do I believe and what do I want to teach? And then 30 days later, we came back and I said, I'm ready to launch. And we launched on March 31st, 2009. That first day, we got 17,000 hits on the page. I got something like 1,000 emails that day from people that were curious about the program. And I responded to everyone because I just assumed that's what you do. Somebody sends you an email.
That's what a startup
leader
does.
Yeah, you just respond to all the emails. A lot of it was outrage because CrossFit, you know, specialists are insects. And now all of a sudden there's like CrossFit Football, which has a specific sport name, but is really kind of a power-based power athlete. And that was even the tagline that Andy Stump came up. I don't know if Andy came up with it, but he was definitely liked it.
Don't give him credit.
Forging powerful athletes because CrossFit was forging elite fitness. And I think when I pitched Andy, I was like, hey, what do you think of these taglines? He's like, forging powerful athletes will literally fucking fry Glassman's brain. He'll be so upset about it. I was like, really? Is that a good thing? He's like, yeah, no, Greg likes it.
That's funny because Kelly Start said that Andy came up with the Subtle Leopard.
I believe he did too.
Okay. Yeah. So he's got a talent for...
Well, Andy's really good about saying some ingenious things off of the cuff. I think if he puts too much mental thought behind it, it crashes and burns. But like his first reaction is usually pretty good. Mm. And, you know, the... So... to take it back. So we launched that first day, we get all these emails, and then I started putting out a program and started trying to teach people about the methodology and what I was trying to teach, knowing full well that I didn't know what I was teaching, but I had a whole bunch of ideas, and I looked at it like a phenomenal sea monkey experiment. I have the ability to push out free programming, and people are going to do it, then they're going to give me feedback. And so I got on the message boards because there was comments and people started leaving like training, like, hey, I did this and this and this. And then people started emailing me and I started collecting all this data in a big spreadsheet. Like, hey, when we do this and this. And then the day before the workouts would get posted, I had my own gym with my own people training and we were testing the training programs. So I started piloting different programs with different groups in our gym. And I just would like look and I'd be like, okay, I like that. That's a good one. Or this is bad. And, you know, then we tested a bunch of stuff like linear progressions and this. And I was able to use all these different like in-person groups that I was training as test groups, push it out to the world and then get thousands of data points. And then they came back to me and said, hey, you got to teach a seminar. 30 days later, we launched a seminar and I proceeded to teach 36 seminars that first year. Where every other weekend.
And seminars one day, two days.
Yeah. So we were flying into all over the world, different locations, showing up on Friday, teaching, basically putting people through a training diagnostic, like legitimate, like a training diagnostic, like what you saw me do for the guys on the Drake's Fury deal, where they come in, we figure out all the things they can and all the things they can't, all the limiting factors, and teach them to do all this stuff. And then I put them through like these diagnostics and I was there Saturday, Sunday, fly home. And then I'd work all day, Monday through Friday, leave Friday night and do this. And I did that 36 seminars that first year. In 9 years, we taught hundreds, or like well over 350 of those. And what's wild is, imagine giving away a free program and then getting the information, and then traveling the world and meeting the people that did the program. And then there were people there that did the program and then people there that didn't. And then you could basically tell within minutes, within the warm-up and within the first piece, the people that did our training versus the people that didn't. And I could basically set them into groups. And then I could test this and this and this. And it was like these absolute savages, these dudes that would show up that were like phenomenal killers. And I'd be like, those are our people. The other people, those aren't our people.
So two things. One, it sounds like you made the decision to retire and hang up the cleats. What was it, because of CrossFit football? You're like, hey, I think this is my next passion.
Well, what was wild is I don't really know. It was kind of a weird deal. So my knee was still pretty banged up, mm-hmm. and I didn't know how long it would take to get better. And then all of a sudden in my 10th year, if I miss my 10th year, then all of a sudden do I like miss that 10th year and rehab and come back to play in my 11th year? So there was it's different today in the NFL where over the age of 30, they don't view you like you have, like you're a leper. So I remember I was 29, everybody was super cool. I turned 30 and like the next day people were like looking at me like sideways. Like it's just, there's this weird misconception that when you hit the age of 30, you're done in the NFL. So I was like 32 and then all of a sudden I'm 33 and then, you know, like what are they going to offer me, rookie minute or a minimum for an 11, 12 year vet? Like what's this thing look like? And I think I was looking at it like, okay, what does this look like? I miss a year, I come back in year 11, and then what? I got to go try out and try to make another team. It's not like, you know, you're only as good as your last game. So when I saw this opportunity present itself, I thought, man, this is pretty interesting. Maybe I'll do this for a year and see if it works. In the back of my mind, I was still going to go to law school. So I had...
And follow you in your old man's.
Yeah,
and my brother. And your brother.
Yeah. So when I graduated in 4 years, I got my master's, or I didn't finished my master's, but I did my master's work in my fifth year in education. And then there was a law school scholarship at Bolt, which has since changed from Bolt. It's called Berkeley Law School now, for a 4-year Cal Letterman to go. It's called the Adrian Cragen Scholarship. So that's what I was kind of gunning for. So I'd taken my LSATs, but LSATs are only good for 5. I'd played 10. So I went back and I was like, okay, first thing I need to do is get my LSAT score up. I'll do that. And then I started emailing all my professors to be able to get letters of recommendation. And I started the process to go to law school, started looking at law schools. So then this hit me up and I thought, oh, this is kind of interesting. Let me do this for a little bit. And I think my brother and I talked about it and he was like, yeah, like I think you could do this for a year. It seems like it might be fun, travel and do some stuff. And I decided like, it was actually the way Glassman pitched it to me, how to develop our technology on how to train athletes. Cause I'd never thought about training as a technology. And I thought that was a fascinating way to put it. So that kind of sparked me. And I decided to do it. And then we did CrossFit football. And then this thing exploded. We started running a business. I traveled and owned a gym. And then obviously.
Gym in California.
Yeah. And I was happy to get out of the gym business. I realized I always wanted a gym with weights for me to train. I always wanted a private gym. I just didn't want members because I didn't want people to break my stuff. Like, I'm like.
People to sit on equipment when you need to get on.
Yeah, I want nice equipment. I want to train with my friends. I don't want a whole bunch of people sitting around breaking and messing up my stuff. And like, it's not that I'm like, don't like to let people play with my toys. I'm more than happy to just like take care of my stuff. And when I owned the gym, people would break shit. They would do stuff. They'd break things. They'd fuck shit up. And it bothered me.
Not
and
put
I just,
weights back.
I just realized. I wasn't. I always wanted a nice gym to train in. I just didn't want people that didn't like that. I always wanted to have gym members. Well, sorry, I didn't want that. I wanted people to come train, but I don't want to take money because I don't want entitlement. Like people come train at the gym, but it's by invite only and they have to respect, they have to clean up and they're there at my discretion. So if you treat it like shit, you don't get invited back.
As you look back, do you think you would have had any fulfillment as a lawyer compared to now? You did.
Oh yeah. I would have.
You love to argue. You've got to get for the gap.
I love to argue. I love the intellectual aspect and the combative nature. My brother's still after me. He's like, dude, we would have crushed it. So my brother's criminal defense in Orange County and is very, very successful and loves his job. And it was part of our deal. So if I had gone that route, I don't think I would have been unhappy, but I wouldn't be sitting here today. I wouldn't probably be living in Texas. I wouldn't have met any of the individuals that I know. Like I would not have met my wife. I met my wife at the gym. Everything in my life you see happened at that like moment to try to do CrossFit football.
Your tribe would definitely have not been as large. No. I mean, you would have had your family, local community, guys from the league.
Yeah, but it would, What's fascinating is that original work that I did at CrossFit Football was so benevolent in many ways because it was free workouts and helping. We built this level of, I guess you call it street cred, is the only word I can give it, where that has extended well into today. I meet people constantly. You know, we were just out doing some work with the guys out in Damnik, and I ran into people that were like, dude, I followed that original website from Afghanistan. I followed that website all over the world. I did it, you know, this, and like people will tell me stories about how impactful and the quality at which they got and the results. And for that, they've always, from that moment on, they've been Power Athlete people. They've been in our ecosystem. They've been our friends. I mean, the amount of like one time our website got hacked, like it just literally got hacked. Like it didn't come up. I called my web guy and I was like, what? He's like, I don't know what's wrong. About 30 minutes later, my phone rings and it's just some guy. It's like, hey, is this John Walborn? I'm like, it is. He's like, I follow CrossFit Football and I can't get the workout because your website is down. And I was like, yeah, I know we got hacked. And this guy's like, what's the workout? And I was like, this is what it is today. He's like, great, I'll have your website up in 30 minutes. And I was like, who is this? And he's like, I'm just telling you, you have CrossFit Football people in a basement in Langley, Virginia. And you getting hacked is not fucking an option. And the dude hung up and our website was back on 30 minutes later. And my web guy calls me and he's like, I don't know how this thing got up, but we didn't do anything. Somebody fixed it. And literally, like, there was some dude in some basement that followed our stuff that did not want my website to get hacked. So he called and asked for the workout. And then it was like, cool, I'm going to work out. I'll get this thing done when I get back.
God bless the agency.
And so I was like, that's why I've always said we've had angels in places we've done. By providing good information and this, I mean, the amount of street cred we've built with people will never know. That one of my good friends that I played in the NFL with for a very long time, who's in the Hall of Fame, he was driving. He had a big van, and when they used to go out in LA or whatever, everybody loaded up in the van. He was driving. They were coming back, got pulled over at night on the CHP on the 405. All of a sudden, you know, like he hadn't been drinking, but there was a whole bunch of people in the van that had been drinking. Like there was like potential for this thing to go up. And the guy walks up, license and registration, hands him the license plate, goes back to the car, calls it in. He's like, what the fuck's going to happen? You know, like it's a, you know, we're in this van. There's a whole bunch of like black dudes and chicks. I mean, like, you know, like this isn't like shit could go south at 2 a.m. in LA. And the guy comes back to him, hands him the license. And he was like, you played with John Welborn? He's like, you did. And he's like, give him a call for me. You know, we all follow CrossFit Football and we love him. And he handed him his license and he drove away. And he called me on the phone and was like, dude, what the fuck is this that you do? And I was like, we provide good information for free on CrossFit Football. And then we moved it over into Power Athlete. But Power Athlete as a company has provided training resources for a lot of people that are in really interesting places.
I have no doubt we're going to help blow you up a little more once we start getting this content on without giving away the farm on Men's Journal, but you'll also be impacting a lot of people. Let me ask you this. So, Rob, what was the Olympic lifting coach that broke from CrossFit pretty publicly?
Greg Everett.
No, not Greg Everett. This guy was an Olympic lift coach, sort of goatee, gruff voice. We've mentioned him before. We used to bring him into the command.
Oh, Mark Ripto?
Yes. Thank you.
He's not an Olympic. Well, he was an Olympic lifting coach, but he's really just like a barbell powerlifting kind of starting strength.
Yeah. So you said you had a program to CrossFit Football that was periodized. It was also on an acceleration pathway. One of the most common critiques of CrossFit that I've heard is one, you're making people instructors in a day or two and they're opening up their own places, is that the workouts were so random, people were getting hurt.
Yeah. So what I did is I virally infected and destroyed CrossFit. And I know this because Greg Glassman had about a dozen drinks and went face down in his soup. And right before he went face down in the soup, he screamed, you destroyed CrossFit. You virally infected CrossFit, convincing people they needed to be strong. We were fine with them being elite before you. And then he went face down.
So your success.
Well, no. So before CrossFit Football, people showed up and there was just one workout. When I programmed CrossFit Football, we programmed strength and conditioning. So I took a very well thought out strength template program and mixed it with conditioning and sprinting and plyos like you would see professional athletes. You can't walk into a single CrossFit gym, all 12 to 15,000 of them around the world, without seeing a strength workout and a conditioning workout. So when you walk in, there's no just one workout. Before, strength was just another element of fitness. I've always believed strength is a platform at which life is built. Strong people do things better. They survive. They're more durable.
Muscle. Yep.
You know, Gabrielle Lyon, you know, the greatest, biggest organ we have is muscle. I've long been a proponent of being as big and muscular as you can, but being able to utilize it and be as efficient as possible.
So did that relationship ended poorly? And that's
It's because, you know, he basically invited, you know, like somebody in to his community, because I was the only licensed version of CrossFit where I had my own version of CrossFit. You know, everybody else was like, you know, there was Olympic lifting, which was an element of CrossFit. There was running, which was an element. Kettlebells, gymnastics, they were all elements of CrossFit. I was the only licensed, you know, Greg Glassman said, build your own version of CrossFit, build your own community, do your own. And I have my own method. Oh, yeah. And to the point where I remember the lawyer came to me and he's like, hey, we have to protect the brand. And I was like, yeah, no, what I'm doing is destroying your brand, because your brand is functional movements performed at high intensity. My brand is not. So by having CrossFit in the name, I'm basically eroding your base concept, like what you've built, like the platform in which you've built the house of CrossFit. I erode that. How can you let me
do this? Not intentionally, not with malintent.
No, not with malintent. Yeah. They asked me to do it. But even I realized it. And when the lawyer came to me, I'm like, oh, I was amazed that you guys let me do this. And I've forever been amazed. And the lawyer like took a deep breath. He's like, you understand? I'm like, 100% I understand. How can you let me do this? And then that's at which point I was like, that's why we have Power Athlete.
So was there a legal process to break? Because did they own the name CrossFit Football?
Yeah, well, they owned anything associated with CrossFit.
And so you broke and started Power Athlete.
Well, I started Power Athlete about 2011, 2012, because this was super random. You're going to love this one. I had CrossFit Balboa, which was my gym, which was CrossFit Balboa LLC. Mm-hmm. Then I had CrossFit Football LLC. And my accountant filed my tax returns with the same address. One was I would use my house, and then Balboa, I'd use the Balboa address. Mm-hmm. He put them as the both Balboa address. So when all of a sudden the IRS looked at this, they saw two LLCs that had similar names in a similar business that were doing kind of had different revenue, kind of like different, just like different streams. So we got audited, and the lady came and visited me, which was wild. And she's like, explain to me. And I showed her like, this is our traveling seminar. Here's all the pictures on the website. Here's what we do at the gym. And I explained to her, and she was like, here's the deal. If you want to avoid this trouble, you need to change the name of one of these and then make sure that the addresses aren't the same. Because when we see multiple LLCs that have similar, you know, this within a similar name, it just looks like, it looks shady. So I sat down, and we had Forging Powerful Athletes. And Greg, at that meeting where he screamed at me about virally destroying CrossFit, he asked me, he goes, he said, I need you to do me one thing. I need you to change the tagline of CrossFit Football from Forging Powerful Athletes to Forging Power Athletes. And I was like, why? He's like, well, powerful implies that we're not such. Power Athletes is a segment. That's a really good name. Mm-hmm. You should look into that. And I went home and was like, Power Athlete it is. That's what we're doing. We're developing Power Athletes.
All communication stopped between you two?
Yeah, we didn't have a good relationship because whereas, you know, like Greg's a complex character.
That's what
I've heard. And he's a very complex, he's a very intelligent dude. I think he's, you know, I wouldn't say he's, I think he had great intent. I don't know I think the intent was right. I think his software's messed up. Right? I'll use that word. But you cannot deny his impact on this world. He has done more to put barbells in mm-hmm. people's hands mm-hmm. than any other human being on the planet. And I don't care if you talk about Arnold Schwarzenegger, Arthur Jones, pumping iron. You know, the only other thing that I think, and I'll say the only other thing that I believe that it was impactful getting people into gyms and getting barbells into house, and they kind of hit at the exact moment, was the movie 300, right? So the movie 300 hits, Jim Jones, Mark Twight trains those guys. People get on. Jim Jones, Mark Twight had a relationship with CrossFit. They were doing very similar training styles. People all of a sudden get on. They can't go to a Jim Jones place. They Google it. They see it, CrossFit. It was like Facebook started, YouTube started, 300 hit, CrossFit was in this infancy, was in this perfect deal. It had this kind of fight club mentality where it's like, if today's your first day, you got to fight. It's a dingy kind of, you go in, garage gyms, tires outside.
Community, yeah. Though.
Community.
Try. Yep.
Fucking diehards. Because, you know, there's definitely building community through shared suffering. I mean, we found that putting people through buds, right? You want to bond a bunch of guys?
Hardship.
Look at the Dirty Dozen. Yes. One of my favorite movies ever. Lee Marvin, if you guys haven't seen it, go watch The Dirty Dozen. Has Charles Bronson, Jim Brown,
This generation is missing out on so many good flicks, from The Dirty Dozen to Cool Hand Luke, that actually need to start being played in grammar school.
The Dirty Dozen is one of my favorite movies. And I remember the big dude Posey, and it had Telly Savalas. I mean, that was one of my favorite movies, but they put those guys, remember, they took away their hot water and they're feeding them, and he's like, well, it's hot, I might've stepped in it or something. You know, I mean, there's so many great lines, but there is something about building community through shared suffering.
Yes.
And it became I always think with religion was doing this, CrossFit did this, but on Saturdays we go work out. We go to the box, we would train, everybody would hang out, and that was our community piece.
That's an interesting point, is I would rather have a group of good-hearted, kind, respectful people that on Sunday went through hardship together, than sit dressed in your best Sunday dress, listening to a sermon that half the time I'm just it's not relevant, it's not applicable. You've lost me.
I mean, on a Sunday, you go in and you rip your hands, you know, tear your calluses, and you're feeling the sting. And, you know, I mean, there's something to that. So, I we hit this thing at an amazing point. I couldn't recreate the magic in which I came from in this idea. In that, you know, CrossFit hits, CrossFit football hits, you know, all of a sudden we're in this, middle of this war, you know, at this peak, and all of a sudden we've gone from, you know, hey, we're push-ups and pull-ups, and now all of a sudden you have special operations looking for more high-end training. They're looking to strength and conditioning. Now they're just not, soldiers. They're these warrior athletes in this mix, and all of a sudden we have these free training programs. Mm-hmm. The military and the law enforcement community had already kind of adopted CrossFit. Now all of a sudden here's this short, heavy, hard, fucking door-kicking version of CrossFit that comes in with an NFL player. Who's, you know, hopefully, fairly intelligent, fairly witty, and has got a decent sense of humor and is kind of a smartass. It just kind of worked. And then I traveled and met all these people and went out and did the PR, shook all their hands, went to taught them in Norway, you know, Bodo, Norway, down to New Zealand and all around the world. And then when Power Athletes started, you know, providing more information, there was a methodology at that point. I had figured out what my technology was. You know, CrossFit's technology was, you know, fitness, increased work capacity, broad time, modal domains based off of their definition. Mine is fostering and developing athleticism. You know, I defined athleticism as the ability to seamlessly and effortlessly combine primal movement patterns through space to accomplish a known or novel task. That definition of athleticism is really the foundation of Power Athlete, and what we do each day is fostering developing athleticism, because athleticism to me is the ultimate trump card. It's the ultimate front engine V12 Ferrari. It's, a pretty girl walks in the room. She might not be my type, but everybody knows she's pretty. You know, that we're talking about Doc driving around in that 911 GT2 RS. I heard that thing from a mile away and I knew exactly what it was. All right. And it made me excited. That is athleticism. We can watch people on NFL Sunday or in the Olympics or this do things that just fucking wow us.
Yes.
And it's that visual, that the symmetry and the execution and the seamless and effortless way that people execute tasks, that we know through our ability to see symmetry within our eyes. We know what athleticism is. You know when you see it. And it's beautiful.
It's almost like watching a stallion just run across the field.
If you understand the components of athleticism, we can break the pieces down, train all the pieces, and reassemble them and make people more athletic versions of themselves.
Here's my question. Here's my observation. I could be completely wrong, which is about 99% of the fucking time. CrossFit may have started out as being for an elite, but it got commercialized. When we see dollar signs, you start to commercialize things, you make it for the masses. It seems like you've not tried or don't want to take Power Athlete to the masses.
Well, it's not for everybody.
Is it not for everyone, or?
Well, I think everybody.
You mean people aren't willing to commit the way you want them to commit?
Well, do I believe everybody should do it? Yes. Should everybody lift weights? 100%. Should everybody eat a high protein diet? 100%. Should everybody be able to move and run and move through space and do things? 100%. The amount of people that do is very limited. If you really wanted to be successful, you would start like walking Pilates yoga based upon a vegan diet. It's really easy to do. Just eat a bunch of beans and let's do some stretching. What you have to remember is there's not a lot of people that are willing to get up at 6 a.m, go into their garage that they've parked their car on the street, fill it with, you know, $6,000 or $7,000 worth of weights, tag into some, you know, power athlete app that they go to, see what the workout is and be like, all right, today with John, we're going to squat heavy.
Which
fives.
Shameless plug, the workouts are totally affordable. Yeah. And the app is on TrainRes.
At this point it's on TrainRes.
The app is great. You can log your progression. Your awesome app.
Yeah. So we, you know, and then they log in and there's video demos and there's a community. I mean, we have, you know, team feeds and discords and we've built this amazing community virtually. And to the point where people are like, hey, this is where I'm at. Oh, I'm close to you. Come train with me. So, I mean, people show up and train and your buddies knock on the door at 6 a.m. What are we doing? We're going to squat today. We're going to pull. We're going to do this and this and this. And then we're going to get on and do about it. There aren't a lot of people that are willing to enter that level of commitment. And you know what? At the end of the day, do I think everybody should? 100%. Do I need everybody? No.
Will, do me a favor. Could you pull up, type in like a Google search for like 1960s or 1950s? I think it's 1950s public school physical education. Yeah. You know the video I'm talking about.
Yeah, 100%.
When I watch this video that he'll pull up, I swear to God, I think it's like a group of, it's like a platoon of Marines training. And these are the kids in high school.
Yeah.
I mean, where do you think we went so vitally wrong where physical education is now like... You can opt in, you can opt out, and it seems like people are opting.
Well, it's because, you know, they had some lawsuits here in Texas especially where physical education was deemed to be culturally insensitive. And so they decommissioned physical education and they made it. This is great. This was in California.
And this was JFK, I think, right?
Yeah, JFK wrote an article in 1959 called The Soft American. I don't know if you guys ever saw that. It was in Sports Illustrated. 1959, he wrote this thing, Soft American.
And it's funny how the beginning of this video revolves around the military service.
Well, there was, I told you about 2 years ago, I got invited to go up to Pennsylvania to the War College, and I was in a little kind of collective kind of brain think deal where they were talking about the largest threat to national security. And so mine was the lack of physical readiness of 16 to 18-year-olds, but also the lack of physical readiness of 26 to 35-year-olds, which if something happened, like imagine, you know, there's 1 billion Chinese that somehow come through the border in Mexico. The calling out of the militia is 26 to 35, maybe 45-year-old dudes. The lack of physical readiness of those individuals, I viewed as almost a larger threat. Because they were, but then again, you think here in Texas, there's a lot of hunters. Mm-hmm. And like the hunting population, I mean, they had 3 million deer tags, you know, in South Carolina alone. Those individuals, like that's, if you were to call out the militia, those are the guys that you call out.
Oh, I know. And here's the thing is there's like hunting doesn't require anyone to be physically fit these days. They get on a side by side and drive out. And
you know, I have,
you know where I'm going with that.
I have a lot of guys that start following our program because they're long range hunters. Like, hey, I'm going to pack back in for 2 weeks and I got to kill this 1,000-pound elk and drag them out. How do we do this?
Those guys are.
Oh yeah. Those guys are.
Those are the extreme hunters now.
We have those guys. And I write, training for them. And those guys, I love seeing it. I love the fact that guys are taking on impossible tasks.
And I wrote about this in the book. And I'm sure you know his name, Professor Dudley Sargent, who Harvard psychologist that advocated for a sound mind in a sound body, advocating for physical education within grammar and high school.
Well, there's a direct correlation between the lack of physical fitness and
mental health.
But also test scores. So in Texas, they have the STAR test. They can pretty much chart like this. When you remove the physicality, you remove physical education from schools, the STAR test started going down. If you want to make those you want to make those go up, you got to have physical. Like people think that this stuff exists in a vacuum. Like it doesn't. Like your physical fitness and your a level of fitness and readiness and strength, like that allows you to be smarter and more intelligent and be able to do these things.
Yeah, I mean, that video right there, you didn't see a kid. And again, they could select who went into the video, but you didn't see an overweight kid there.
No.
You go
no,
to
they're,
well, school.
They're all like, they all look like they're wearing, what are the?
UDT shorts?
Yeah, UDT bud shorts and no t-shirts. And every one of those kids is jacked. They're climbing like 60-foot poles. Right, like that, and that was, JFK's whole deal had to do with, and he wrote, like I said, that Soft American, and the Presidential Physical Fitness Test, which he kind of piloted, then he gets assassinated, and then LBJ brings it in, and I think it was originally, and then I think it was Eisenhower, if I'm messing this up, that signed it in, but we did that presidential physical fitness test when we were kids. Remember, it was like the breakneck was like the pull-ups were always the motherfucker. And
the flexor arm hang. Always.
Yeah, like the flexor arm hang was always my, that's how I passed. But it was like push-ups and that. Like, that stuff is a real deal, man. But do I, am I promoting, like, here's the thing. Like, I, like, my flavor has never been for everybody. I used to always joke that there's people that like me. Like there was a old country song that was like, some girls don't like guys like me, but some girls do, kind of a deal. Like, I always like that line, because there's a type of person that digs what I preach and what I'm pushing out. And there's a lot of people that don't. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, it's really easy to figure out who your tribe is. You know, like we were talking about community or tribe. Mm-hmm. The reason that men over the age of 40 kill themselves at insane rates has to do with one thing. As men age, they start becoming these curmudgeons, and they start kind of becoming these lone wolves, and they become, you know, overly crystallized. And, you know, they all of a sudden, you know, like the neural pathways get crystallized and they get stuck in their ways. And you can almost look at a guy's haircut at about 26, 28, and his haircut never changes. And it's because that's the moment he crystallizes. And he only wants to hang out with this. And then all of a sudden he becomes, and he isolates himself. And this is why guys are so lonely. That's why you need tribes. You need something to buy into. I watched something the other day where this guy's like, the reason men kill themselves is they don't have friends. They said something like 7 out of 10 men do not have somebody that they could call. Hey, like, here's something terrible that happened to me. My wife got cancer, or this and this and this. There's 7 out of 10 men that don't have anybody to call. When they asked him, if something terrible happened, do you have somebody you could pick up and call and talk to about it? 7 out of 10 men said no. How sad is that? Like, this is kind of hilarious, but, so my daughter got into trouble at school last year, maybe it was 2 years ago, and she came home and I gave her this whole talk about, like, people know you by the company you keep, birds of the feather. And if you're hanging around with the wrong kids, you're going to get painted with that brush.
Yes.
And you are the sum of the people you're around. And we got in this whole talk. And so one of the guys that worked for me, kind of an interesting dude in a lot of ways, I'm not going to name his name, but had a lot of personality flaws. And she said to me, well, look at the guy you're hanging out with at work. Like, you hang out a lot with him and he's got a lot of personality flaws. And she said it to me and I was like a dagger in my heart. I was like, oh shit, she's right.
Touché.
So at that moment, what did I do? I went out like immediately and got friends. I went out, and that was when I reached out to Shanji, started doing, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Matt, I reached out to Matt. He lived up the road from me and I was like, dude, you want to train together? So I brought him into the fold because I wanted him to teach wrestling. And like, Matt's like best dude, older brother, had followed CrossFit football, found us in 2009.
Oh, shit.
And lived up the road from me. And I'd never, our kids went to the same school and we weren't friends. And I like looked at him. And I was like, how come we're not good friends? You're like, one, we have kids the same age. Two, you're like lifelong CrossFit football guy doing it in your gym 2 miles away from my house. Why aren't we training? And you wrestle and do jiu-jitsu. Come on. So we became friends. I started training Victor and the Six Blades guys. And so I took on that whole training thing. I mean, I started going out and doing this. Agreed to come on your podcast and this, and just met other people. I realized that, like, I didn't even intentionally do it. I just got so stuck in dealing with my wife and my kids and you know, the land that I manage on our property and the shop and, like, all the things within life, like, started occupying my time. And the one thing that just got removed was friendships and having, like, a tribe and a bond. And I realized, like, shit, like, I can go in my truck and weld and do all these things, but, like, I'm doing it by myself or with DJ. Like, this isn't good for me. And hanging out with the guy that was working for me and the couple guys that work for me, like, they weren't allowing any growth because I see them every day and, you know, their own personality flaws were there.
I'm in that space right now because, one, you started out, what, 2010, 2011, building your businesses.
2009.
Yeah. I'm there right now to where my friendships have been degrading, but I've heard this from every entrepreneur, like you included. Yeah. And then I'm hoping after we get some stability and repeatability that I can start, fostering those friendships again, but my communication, and you know this about me, I don't communicate with anyone because I'm constantly focused on the businesses, making sure that revenue is coming in to put money on their tables. Yeah. It's awful, but in my DNA is structured for a tribe. But you bring up Matt, that guy intrigues me.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
One, he's like you, wicked smart.
Yeah.
Cornell and Hofstra MBA in a degree of finance. That guy could have easily went UFC and probably competed at the level.
He was legit heavyweight, obviously wrestled a Power 5 school, played football at Cornell. Mm-hmm. got his degree and, you know, went and worked on Wall Street, you know, and now he's a bond trader, you know, super smart, but yet a complete meathead. You know, his wife is from here in Austin. Her parents, her dad is family to some like big land baron, and they have like 5,000 acres up on the Sansibar River. Probably the most amazing property I've ever been to the point where we were driving on it, and I was like, somebody owns all this? Oh, yeah. It's incredible.
What do they got? So, what's it stocked with?
They got, I mean, they hogs. Rent a ton of it out to, there's hogs and deer and turkey, and they rent a bunch of, or lease a bunch of land out to these cattle, you know, deal. But, I mean, pretty amazing. So, not only a great dude, but, like, has kids. His kids go to the Montessori that my kids went to, and he lives up the road. We train, you know, every other day at 6 a.m. He broke his ankle at a jiu-jitsu thing. He crossed his legs, and the guy broke his ankle, but it didn't tap, still tapped the dude out. So we've been helping him rehab that. He's just like,
this happened recently.
A couple weeks ago.
Oh.
Or like maybe a month ago. But the hilarious is he comes like limping. I'm like, stop limping. He's like, okay, I'll stop limping. Yeah, it's just like a good dude. And I've realized, I think a lot of people, like and me included, being like, how come I don't have more friends? And I always go back to what my mom said. If you want to have a friend, you have to be a friend. Mm. Like waiting at home for somebody to call you to go something, like they might not call, they might call. But if you call them, it's 100%. Either they answer, they don't. It was kind of like we were kids. We come home, we get on our bikes. We didn't call anybody. We just rode around until we found out where all the other bikes were. And we parked our bikes and knocked on the door. And so my mom's like, why is it any different for adults? Find out, like, get on your bike, go ride your bike around, find your friends, knock on the door and show up and be part of the group. But I think too, a lot of guys, especially when they get to this point, have a lot of ego and they want everything to be around them. I'm like, dude, I'm more than happy to be somebody's plus one. Like, hey, do you want to go on this? I'm happy to be your plus one because I'm going to show up and I'm going to have a good time. And on top of it, they're going to be like, that's a good plus one. You never want to be the plus one where you're like, God damn it. Like, let the air out of his bike tires and we'll leave him behind. Like, you know, show up, have a smile, have a joke, be friendly. Don't be high maintenance. You know, don't be an asshole. You know, asking like, I got a small bladder. I got to pull over every 6 minutes to take a pee. Like that type of stuff, you know, like just be like a good dude. And I think a lot of guys forget how to be dudes. Like I grew up with older brothers. I was always the youngest. I know how to be the younger brother. I know how to keep my mouth shut, but I also know how to be funny when I need to.
Your brother as big as you?
Yeah, my older brother is a little bit taller.
Do you play football?
Uh-huh. Both my brothers played college football.
Where?
Pomona College.
Pomona.
So they played at the Claremont Schools, yeah. Division III. Okay. So my older brother's a little bit taller.
Good school.
But he actually has a really big head. So I joke that he's like a 32-inch inseam. So I'm a 36, but he's a little taller than me because he's got big head numbers. He's like fucking Dino. He doesn't fit in cars because he's got a long torso. And then my other brother has got like his torso didn't grow as much, so he's only 6'3".
Your old man play as well?
No, he played. So my dad, I think I might have told you, was super smart. Mm-hmm. So he graduated high school at like 16. So he was in like he was just super smart. And he worked. He tried to play water polo a little bit, but he graduated high school so early and he was in college. Wasn't really a deal for him. But, like, he was super excited for us to go and compete in sports and he loved it. He just didn't – it really wasn't like his parents – like, when I asked him about it, he's like, my parents didn't necessarily encourage me or push me. Like, I shouldn't have graduated that early. They should have been like, take your time, play sports and this. But he's like, there was this idea that you got to graduate and start working and go to college and do all these things as quick as possible. And so that was kind of what he did. Which is different. And he's like, I wish they told me to slow down and play sports.
Have a little fun.
Yeah.
I want to hit mobility before we get into where people can find you. Okay. You know, stretching and mobility when we were growing up was just like it was forced upon you and you always had to get in the line and they made it miserable. Mobility, agility, I mean, when did you start to take ownership over that rather than being told to do it? Like, when did that become important? With age? Injuries?
6 years old.
Six.
So I
that's odd.
My older brother was 6 years older, so he was 12. He got beat up by a local bully, and came home, told my dad, straight up Karate Kid style. My dad took my older brother down to this like martial arts dojo, this Japanese Shotokan place.
Yes, okay.
So he took my brother down there, and about 3 weeks later, he just like took me and my other brother, and it was old school. Like the whole dojo was like a wooden floor like this. Mm-hmm. The old Japanese dude had like a bamboo boken stick they used to beat us with, and we used to have to like sit on your knees in like. You know, basically like sumo sit, or I'm sorry, we call it samurai sit. So you got to sit on your feet and you'd have to sit on this hard wooden floor. And then he would do the demos. Then you had to like shin hop and get up and we'd do all this stuff. And a big part of our thing had to do with like flexibility. And I was always fascinated by flexibility and more like mobility, right? Just for the fact that like I saw people that were really flexible, but they weren't flexible under load. So I always wanted to be flexible while I was doing athletic things. Like when you watch all of a sudden somebody, you can see somebody like put their leg over their head.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden they kick and they can't get it there. So like being flexible wasn't necessarily a benefit. Having incredible like flexibility under load, which I think you call mobility these days, where like now all of a sudden I can kick my leg up and do this. And so we were looking to be more flexible as better movers for Shotokan, which had a lot of things called katas,
yes,
which is like a pre, it's kind of like a dance almost. And we would have to work on these. So we would do all of our kicking and punching and all that stuff. But then when we would go to test for belts, you had to memorize this kata, and the kata was how we got more belts. So there was like this whole kind of repetition deal. I just liked the punching thing. And then when I was 10, I thought kicking was dumb and I wanted to get into boxing, but there wasn't a boxing place close. I could ride my bike. So then I went to a kickboxing place that had a ring. And then when I was 14, I ended up started to train with this boxing coach. And that was what I did through high school while I was playing football. And then when I went to Cal, we trained with the Cal boxing team in the off season. And then we did a bunch of boxing stuff in the NFL.
I know for probably a lot of listeners, myself included, I never put a precedence on mobility or flexibility as a whole.
It's one of those things that you don't think about until you really need it.
Yeah. That's preparedness.
Yeah. I mean, so like, some of the injuries I've had in the NFL, I still have those injuries. I just am able to like compensate for them by having really good flexibility in other ways. Like for example, like I'm missing, like I don't have full flexion in my right knee, but you would never know because I got great hip flexibility. And so a lot of that mobility in the hip and in the trunk and some of the other things, I'm able to cheat where people don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so like people watch and they're like, oh shit, you can't bend your knee there. I'm like, no, I can't. But yeah, like I wouldn't know. So I think that flexibility, mobility piece has always been an incredible part of my NFL career. If like you pull up any of the pictures and I show them, especially like when you see me in my stance, like my, like literally like my hip and the top of my leg is parallel to the ground in my stance. And I could sit down because of the reason I could look around. So, I mean, I was able to get into some positions a lot of guys weren't because I had flexibility. I trained with heavy weights and was able to be really dynamic in those ranges of motion. Just a lot of guys didn't.
So you have made a very dubious claim of being, what, 300 pounds and 8% body fat?
Yeah, I was 306. I was 282 pounds of lean muscle.
Will, what do you think? Can you produce documentation on that?
I can show you pictures. I don't think I actually have. I should have taken. So this is again. Well, this is pre-cell phone picture stuff. So this was like we didn't have iPhones, so I had like BlackBerry. So I don't really have, like, I'm pretty upset because there was a lot of training, a lot of things that we could have. So, I mean, I do have some pictures from back
in
those days.
It's a picture when he was with the Eagles. He's in the three-point stance. The vascularity in your arms is ridiculous.
Yeah. No, So, yeah, so, I mean it's hard to, dude, it's hard to have that level of vascularity.
What percentage do you think you're probably the most fit lineman?
Yeah. I would make that
in
claim.
In the NFL.
Yeah. I would make that claim. So when the Eagles got their new facility, I was training down in Florida at the time. The Eagles got their new facility and they wanted to bring all like the media in and do like this like big like walkthrough of the new deal.
Of course.
So they flew me in to do the news demo. So like Rick Burkholder, who's the trainer, was like, hey, can we fly you in? Like the media's coming and we want you to do, be like the demo guy going through the pull up and everything. And I kind of laughed, and I was like, okay. So I flew in.
So basically, you're a male model.
And then I also did it for Mark Verstegen for Athletes Performance. They had a big, like, media thing with the with like the local news and all that, and they were always like, hey, can you do all the stuff for it?
I think there's a better one where you're still, one. But yeah, I mean, so you literally had abs. There you go, one right there.
Yeah, go to the right there. Go down. Go back. Oh, yeah, there's that. No, if you go down to the left, go down a little bit more. Let me see if there's a picture in there. Go up.
Is that you practicing?
Yeah, go up. Oh, yeah, go to the right. Yeah, that one. Click on that one. So that's a pretty good one. You see a pretty good, but you see, all right, you see the, do you see the position I'm sitting in?
Yeah. How much lower you are than...
Yeah, so like the top of my leg and my hips are almost below parallel. Look at the guy next to me. I'm 4 inches taller than him. He's 6'2", and I'm 6'6".
And he's got no mobility
in
his hips.
But look at my head. My head's like 3 inches below his. So like I could sit in that position and look around and see what was going on. and had the ability to come out of my stance and generate force out of that
going
position.
Going more up.
Oh, yeah. Than but out. I could play out of that position where a lot of guys can't play that low. They teach guys not to do this because only a few people can. And then, obviously, you got a good bicep vein that you can see.
Damn, dude, and that's against your home team.
It's against the Niners.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we were playing them on the, I believe that was in San Francisco.
That's McNabb, right?
Yeah, it's McNabb, Deuce Staley, Hank Fraley. Deuce is both the center and the running back are NFL coaches now. But, I mean, you can see, I mean, I'm 6'6", yeah. And, like, that guy's 6'2", next to me, and I'm way lower than him. And then, obviously, you see, you know, you can almost see through. You can see my clavicle, got some good muscle there. So, yeah, man, I was always in good shape.
And I remember you saying that the transition from high school to college was worse than college to the NFL. It was because it was the speed of it.
Well, it was just the maturity. Like, I'm 18 years old. I don't own a razor. So when I went to college, I remember my roommate's like, hey, where's your, like, because, you know, you, like, put your toothbrush out in there. He's like, how come I haven't seen a razor? I'm like, because I don't own one. So I went to 18. I grew from 6'4 to just under 6'6 when I was in college. So I showed up as a freshman. I was 6'4. And then by the time I was 21, I was 6'6.
All 4 years at Cal?
5 years.
5 years.
Yeah, I redshirted that first year, thank God. Just because I was physically not ready. Like it took, like, these guys, like, I showed up, these dudes had chest hair and beards, and I'm like, I don't even own a razor. So I was physically just kind of a late developer, but I grew early, so they were able to invest. But no, I mean, it took me. So I think showing up and playing with, like, 23-year-old grown men when you're, like, a kid is a lot different than being 24, 25, playing against 35, 30-year-old men. Like, that was not, I mean, I came in and started as a rookie. There's no way I could have started as a rookie in the NFL or in college.
Do you see the documentary on Johnny Manziel?
I have not.
You've got to go watch
this. But I'm not surprised on some of his, like, absolute insanity.
So there is definitely some mental
illness.
Yes, there, but it does show.
I kind of hate shit like this because it paints people like me in a weird light, right? Because, like, you know, I'm sure, like, you know, some SEAL goes and swallows his gun or, you know, goes on a high-speed chase and kills himself, and then everybody thinks, oh, all these SEALs are this way.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you guys are all broken, and these guys, and you're like, whoa. Like, that guy was, you know, Manziel, you know, incredible, you know, Johnny Football, what he did and all that, but, I mean, he was a shitty NFL player. He was a great college player, and he won the Heisman and all these other things. He was a terrible NFL player.
I think it does prove a point. Like, there is value in staying in college for 4 years and maturing, especially with what he going on. But here's the interesting thing, and go watch it. I think you'll laugh. So donations for Texas A&M went from, like, $300 million a year to basically $800 million a year the year he won the Heisman as a freshman. And it does. I don't know your opinion, but with the NIL, dude, for these guys sacrificing their bodies. And I know you're probably conflicted because you didn't have it.
I would have been happy with just full training table. You could have paid 3 meals for me because our scholarship check, we were, like, below the poverty line. Like, we were struggling to eat. I remember, you know, whenever recruits would come, like if you were, the reason you would host was they would take you out to dinner and forget to eat meals. I remember, like, showing up to be, like, a plus one and them being like, you can't eat. It's a violation. And I'm like, yeah, but there's all this food. It's a buffet. Like, we could all eat. And they're like, no, you can't eat. It's a violation. You have to go. And yeah, them kicking us out of, like, a full deal. And we're, like, scholarship players, and they won't even give us a free meal. Like, it's fucking bullshit. And you know what? The NIL thing, I personally think the Peyton or old man Manning did it smart, where he basically took all the money they were paying the kid, put it in an account, and it's like, that money will be there, but he's not going to have access to this money.
Yes.
We'll give him enough to live, but he's not driving in a fucking Lamborghini. Yeah. And I really think that the pressure of college and that and, like, that struggle, like, there's no way to, like, was it good? Yes. I think you have to go through that struggle a little bit.
It's building adversity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? I'm nervous when we don't have adversity or struggle because a lot of these kids are going to make probably more money in college than they'll ever make in the NFL because the NFL is such a small little, like, it's like showing up to a party and your name is probably not on the list. Like, everybody gets invited and they're going to show up and be like, yeah, you're not on the list and you get to go. Or you might even get into the party and somebody taps you on the shore after 10 minutes and it's like, you got to go. And very few people are going to get that opportunity, but there's a lot of opportunity for these kids to get paid in college. And I think that they should. the schools are making so much money, and the NCAA, the way they treated, if they would have just paid players and not let it like force us below the poverty line, none of this would have happened.
So my displeasure with higher education, they don't need any money because we won't get into the indoctrination that's going on within higher education. But, you know, you could create a system where if a student gets X amount of money, 60% or maybe even higher, 70% is going into an account for which they can have access when they graduate.
100%.
The rest they can utilize for cost of living. And
I think they got to put some of these plays in because these people are investing a ton amount of money. But then the other issue comes down to if you do this, then the schools have the ability on the other side. If you're not let's say they pay you all this money and, you know, donors do this and you're getting a scholarship and you don't produce, they have the ability to be like, you're out. We'll take your scholarship.
Yes.
And they should be able to cut players like as quick as players are moving around. The coaches should be able to voluntarily put these kids into their own portal and be like, you suck. You're going in your own portal.
The transfer portal. I don't agree with it because you're just giving people an easy out.
Or what you do is you allow them to do it once in a career transfer one time. Because they have endless transfer portals. Yes. I would say, you know what? Everybody's granted the right to transfer one time. So only use it if you really have to. So these kids show up as freshmen, and here's the deal. I didn't expect to play as a freshman. Dude, these guys were like 6'5", 300 pounds. They had hairy chests, they had beards, and they benched 500 pounds. I like show up without a razor, and I'm like looking at these dudes, and I'm like, you know, and then these kids are like, I'm mad, I'm leaving, I'm not playing. There was no way I would have played me. Even in my second year, like after I'd already had a year to mature, like I played, like I probably shouldn't have been playing. It wasn't until like my third year where all of a sudden now I'm 20 years old. I've been in the program. I lifted. I know what it takes to do it. Like now all of a sudden I'm ready. And then in that fourth and that fifth year, like those last 3 years, I was physically ready. Kids going in and being like, hey, I'm not playing as a freshman, but transferring out. Dude.
Which I get. That's the competitive nature. They want to be on the field.
Well, the problem is people have their perception of reality is really far off.
An inflated view.
Dude, I've done this. I've had many people reach out to me and said, hey, you know, can this kid come in and train with you? Or could you put him through an assessment? Or just at least train with him a little bit and let me know if he has it. And I'm like, the fact that you're asking me this tells the story. You can send him out and I'll tell you whether or not he can play or not. Like we had a kid, a friend of ours was like, hey, my best friend from high school, son's a pretty good football player. He's like 15 years old, can't even drive yet. Can he come train with you guys and like just help him a little bit and like know like what he should do, right? Because like I think the dad hadn't played football, so didn't know how to mentor him. So I was like, yeah, bring him up. She's like, what time do you guys train? I'm like, we train at 7 a.m. The mom like drove up from Wenderley, got a hotel room the night before because she was so nervous she'd be late. Shows up, they're right there. Kid comes in. The kid's like 6'3", like 15 years old, like probably 175, 180 pounds, like good-looking kid. Like physically, like you looked at him and like the shoulders were wide and square. He got down in his stance and I was like, we did a few things. And I was like, dude, let me talk to him. And I just talked to the mom. I talked to the kid. I'm like, here's what you're going to tell coaches. You're going to take him to all these camps. And when they start talking to you, this is what you're going to say. So I gave him like three lists of names. I want you to like look up. I want you to look up Howie Long. I want you to look up this. And I gave him all these different players to look up. And so because the first question they're going to ask you is like, what kind of player do you think you are? Who do you watch? Who do you emulate? And so I gave him like three players to watch and I pretty much wrote him out this script. So the kid goes and I'm like, here's how I want your stance to look. This is what I want you to do. This is, you know, I just basically prepped him all the shit that no college coach think that a 15 or 16 year old kid would know. He went to every one of these camps. Every one of those camps offered him. Every one of those camps were like heads were blown on this kid. And the mom came back. She's like, how did you know? And I'm like, cause I know. And I know what to say because I've been there. I know what they're looking for. And this kid has it. I can tell you within a minute. We had another kid to show up. I'm like, he might be look for a Division I, Division III, or Division II, Division III school. But, like, let him go have a good experience if he can play.
Team.
Yeah. So I really think, and not to say that, like, I would have been, you know, in high school, somebody thought I was going to play in the NFL. But I think you start on a progression. And as long as you continue to do better each time and you keep moving up it, like, all of a sudden you put yourself in a position. And then all of a sudden, like, I got to the point where I actually thought playing in the NFL was easier than college football. I liked the game better. It was faster. It fit more to my skill set. I liked the NFL game better than I did the college game.
And you could think. But
it was slow to me. The college game was really slow. The NFL game was really fast, and it just worked with the way my brain worked.
I'd tell you to pull up the video where he knocks the guy down, and then as the guy gets back up, you knock him down again. Yeah, just poor sportsmanship. I'm joking. Where can people find you? So powerathletehq.com. Was powerathlete.com taken?
Powerathlete.com. The guy's been squatting on it for years.
I hate these.
And I've MFs. I've tried to buy it numerous times.
And now he's racking up the prices.
He wants six and seven figures for it. So we have Power Athlete HQ, and we also use Power Athlete Inc. and other stuff. But, you know, here's the deal. I can either – one day I'll get it. Do you know why? Because I'm
patient.
Patient. And I'll eventually get it. But if you put in John Welborn into social, it's all my social, and it's Power Athlete if you put that in. That's me.
So there's somebody – so we've got the trademark for Everyday Warrior for purposes of education, podcast, radio, everything else. But somebody's squatting on it for apparel with no intent to do anything about it. Well, and the guy's a nice guy. He had great intent.
And I tell people, and I've told the guy, here's the deal. Like, nobody can ever buy this because they can't ever use it. I own it in every class. So, like, you can either sell it to me, and he's like, oh, I'm doing something with it. And, like...
That's what this guy keeps saying.
And yeah. And I'm like, all right, that's fine. I'm going to keep living my life, but eventually it'll come back around. Good.
Yeah. Guys, go follow John. Again, we're going to stand back up the live sessions, but we're going to start doing a lot more. We've been in a holding pattern. For reasons
well, we got some adventures.
Oh, we've got some adventures. We got Drop Zone Moab,
which I'm pretty excited about.
Well, we've got to see if we can tandem you in. The weight is the limiting factor.
Dude, find me the weight. If I got to diet, I'll diet. I think I was 272 today. So if I could lose another 10 or 15. If I could be in the low 260s.
So I've got to ask Nick and Boots the weights on a standard tandem rig, but I think they got to get the tandem heavy for you. Which exists, so mm-hmm. It's not a big deal. But we got to get you on a 360 solo, because our mutual friend, he's not as tall as you, but wait, I mean, he's jumping combat equipment, so you got to be in the same frame. And even if somebody else has to jump in your pack, we can do that. That's normal. But we've got some good ventures. I think we've got to lock in with Shinedown to go work out with them in December.
Yeah,
and then
good is for Power Athlete Radio. I have banked the entire year of Power Athlete Radio. So we powered it, and I pretty much...
So you've got one full year every week into the future.
Yeah, into the future. And so we banked it through January. So I'm done through January.
So you're not doing any podcasts until then?
Unless they're in person. I'll only do in person. So if I have somebody we had Sully come in.
Yeah.
I had Mark Ripto, David Weck came in. I'm supposed to go up and do Rip's podcast, who you mentioned, up at Starting Strength in Wichita Falls in the next couple weeks. So if people come in... somebody wants to do an in-person podcast, I'm done with doing Zoom for 2023. So it's really just kind of opened up a ton of time for me in terms of being able to go do different adventures. And, you know, this week, Friday, I leave to go to Vegas for the IBJJF. It's called the Grand Prix. Victor's fighting on Friday night.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Is
so
he ready?
He's probably the best he's ever looked.
No kidding.
And the healthiest he's ever been.
Stronger.
Yeah. He's a stronger. He's the best he's ever been. So he has no injury, and this is the best at jiu-jitsu. At least that's what the guy's been telling me, Shanji's been telling me. But he's in a 16-man shootout for $40,000. So he's in one side of the bracket. If he wins three matches, he wins. So he's got two, and then he's got the finals if he wins. So he's going against some guys that he's fought many times, and it'll be good for him. But this version of Victor Hugo, nobody's seen.
Does he do anything different with his diet going into it?
We always, he's protein heavy. I was fighting him kind of early on. He's still got a little bit of this is just his age. He's got a little bit of complexion issue. So when I see somebody's got a little bit of break in complexion, I usually cut dairy and kind of back the carb off a little bit. So he really, early on, we did a real high protein, kind of every 4 days, he'd do a carb refeed, kind of anabolic diet.
Yeah.
Helped him completely remodel. He felt he needed a little more carb. So I've been battling him on it, but at the end of the day, I'm not going to micromanage everything. But if I see any breakout, I'm like, dude, got the dairy. And then we tried him some different protein powders. Finally found him one that wasn't breaking. But he gets a little bit of – he's too old to be getting breakouts.
Yeah.
And if you're 25 years old and you're still getting – and you get breakouts, it's usually from the dairy.
Yeah.
So – and it's because, here in Texas, we don't do raw dairy and, pasteurized. All this stuff is kind of bullshit. So for him, I'm like, just don't do it.
We're all going to die cancer.
Convinced. Well, probably. I mean, if you look at all the environmental shit we got going on, I mean, it's 100%. So, I mean, I was Tom Inkledon, and we were out in Arizona, and he's like, dude, the environmental stuff, he showed me one clip, and it was some environmental toxin that the acceptable rate's one part per 200,000 mil parts, right? Whatever.
And we're at.
He had a client that was at 100,000
per 200,000.
So he's at a 1-to-2 ratio, and the acceptable rate is like 1 part to 200,000.
And he's come down with cancer?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's like, you know, this is, we're seeing younger and younger, healthier people coming down with cancer than we've ever seen. And it's environmental, it's BPAs, it's, you know, the glycophosphates and all this. And like, whether or not you're like, oh, tinfoil hat. No. Those, like, we knew back in the 70s that shit caused cancer. You go and like, when you see a container that says may cause cancer, was because there was a study where it did cause cancer. And they just put may on there. So, I mean, you know, it's a real problem.
Yeah.
And then you think about like, you know, oh, you know, we live in a pretty good place, but what about the clouds, right? So let's say you have something and all of a sudden it burns up, it gets in the clouds, it floats over and now it drops on us.
Right.
Because they found people that were infected. They found high levels of things that weren't anywhere in the environment other than on the other side of the world. And their only explanation is clouds. And like, I mean, we're in a weird deal.
We are. You know, it said may cause cancer on my Copenhagen. Can, but I continue to do that for 19 years.
And
if I get it, there's I've got no one else to blame but myself. Yeah. Thank you, Marine Corps. That's awesome. All right, guys, we will literally keep on talking if we don't stop this.
Yeah.
We have that tendency. We'll see you guys next time.
Thanks, sir.
Hi, I'm Devin Whitmire. People from South Carolina, like myself, are proud of their state, but even we don't know every nook and cranny or every piece of culture or history. To explore places that are off the beaten path, you have to talk to the people there, because their stories, their ideas, make everything come together. From Discover South Carolina, it's the Palmetto Porch. To learn more, visit scpalmettoporch.com.